biggest bad boy of podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guest. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is AJ Kirsch, a.k.a. Broson Joe Brody.
And this is Follow Bob.
This is Alita.
This is Halston Bobby.
This is Darewolf PJ Black.
This is Kathy Campanelli.
This is Tom Garland. That's right, comedian Tom Garland from the movie Headstrong with Rob Van Dam. And right now, you are listening to the
Vegas Bad Boys.
Vegas Bad Boys.
Vegas Bad Boys.
Vegas Bad Boys.
Vegas Bad Boys podcast. Like, share, and subscribe. And if you don't, you can catch me outside. How about that?
Wrestling talk.
I love wrestling talk.
Is it time for wrestling talk?
Wrestling talk.
I love wrestling talk.
It's time for my wrestling talk.
Don't bother me. It's time for wrestling talk.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents Wrestling Talk.
All right. Welcome to another...
You're up, DJ. You can start now. Anytime there, DJ.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, man.
You don't have to repeat yourself so much. It's your own delay.
Thank you so much, man.
What? Wait, stop repeating yourself.
Stop it.
As you guys can see, this is the Halloween show. A lot of weird things seem to be happening, and I'm going to blame it all on Matt Michaels, you know, so it's just easier. Welcome to another edition, y'all. Vegas Bad Boys. I'm your host, DJ Impact. I got all the bad boys here with me. We're excited to be on tonight. Hell in a Cell just came off. A lot to dissect there. Also, another big pay-per-view this weekend, Bound for Glory. We're going to get into that. And also a lot of the wrestling shows that happened during the week. So if you got any comments, just jot it down in our Facebook live feed comments. And we welcome all of our Periscope and YouTube, Twitch followers and viewers of this podcast. So enjoy and, put in a comment if you got something to say. Guys, let's jump right into it. Hell in a Cell. I didn't know what to expect going into this. Last week, we only had three matches that we knew of, and that's because we just got off of the drafts, and then we come to find out what other matches. And I got to tell you, I don't think they failed to deliver on this pay-per-view. Guys, what's your take on it?
I thought it was a good, very good pay-per-view. I'm not even going to say good. I thought it was very good.
Mm-hmm.
From the way that it started to the way that it finished. And they had some good stuff in the middle there.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was a very good pay-per-view.
Is there anybody who thought that it wasn't that good or could have been better? Okay.
I think that I first want to say the actual Hell in a Cell matches were great. Okay. I enjoyed them.
Okay.
They were great. But the matches that were not Hell in a Cell weren't horrible, but they were not on the level as those Hell in a Cell matches.
Not on the level of the Hell in a Cell matches. It's in a fucking cell, and it's hell.
It wasn't on the level. Anyways, go ahead, Matt Michaels. I'm not going to stop. Go ahead. Speak your mind.
No,
speak
I want to hear mind. What you thought about these matches that were apparently not good.
Well, first of all, I give two shits about Otis and whether or not he won or didn't win. I was just like, okay, yeah,
About an angle that's been going for fucking 6 months.
Yeah, but you talk about one topic for about 6 months too, and we don't give a shit about that either. But you don't see me complaining.
Well, look, let's start right there. Okay, did anybody see the swerve coming on Otis at all? Can anyone say, man, I saw no. Tucky? You saw that, Matt Michaels?
Yeah, I said it in the chat right before it happened. I'm like, they're about to make the turn. That was actually, and it's not like I saw this, I'm great. No, it meant that they booked it fucking right.
Right.
I used to.
I don't know. I You know, I like Otis. I'm high on Otis. And I think, listen, if you want to take it off of him, I'm okay with that too. You know, I'm a little sad for Otis. Okay. But why the Miz?
Because he's a mouthpiece.
I know that they've been in the story with the Miz and the whole nine.
And but also, too, you forget one thing. Yeah. You forget one thing.
What's that?
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I just thought about it literally just now. Daniel Bryan, is he on Raw or SmackDown? I just want to make sure.
SmackDown.
Okay, he's on SmackDown. Never mind. And that went through the roof. I thought maybe that would have been cool. Because he only has 1 year on his contract. So immediately, just now thinking, I thought, man, that would have been cool. But outside of what I just thought of, I think that The Miz is, if you're going to give it to somebody, I wouldn't mind that, because I think that he could make for an interesting match in the future when he decides to cash it in.
But who would he defend that against? I mean, he ain't going to take it from Orton. You know, I mean.
No.
I think you're just assuming right away that he'd go against Orton.
Well, I just threw that name out there. I know he has access to any title. But I don't know.
But you just literally threw out something that's like right now. Who's to say Orton has that belt within the next 4 weeks?
Okay.
True. He may not.
Okay.
Yeah, everyone's booking here so fast, and all you guys complain about is, oh, continuity is not there, and they don't develop storylines, and blah, blah, fucking blah. They're doing it. Now it's like, well, I don't want to see this guy with the fucking briefcase.
I haven't said a fucking word, and I'm the one that always talks about continuity.
Yeah, I agree, Steve.
I have no problems with what they did. Zero issue. I thought it was fucking masterfully done. Okay. I mean, it as you just mentioned, Michaels, they worked on this storyline for 6 months. And this was the logical kind of conclusion, you know, that wraps it up in a pretty precise way. And it allows you to quickly spin Otis away from The Miz and allows you to, you know, throw The Miz up into the upper tier of the card. And you've got a feud. Now, granted, if WWE wants to do what they love to do, and that is go against their very own storylines and, again, continuity. Keep in mind, Tucker is on a different brand than Otis. How are they going to pay this off? Are they going to pay this off? Or is this just going to be just a clean break?
Well, I think that the next pay-per-view Survivor Series,
which is the only time all year that Raw and SmackDown superstars can wrestle each other, supposedly.
Except for WrestleMania.
Except for WrestleMania and the wild card rule and every other week where we forget a rule or we just want to develop one out of fucking thin air.
Oh, man.
But the answer here, Lucky, is who did you want to take that briefcase then?
I don't know. I guess, listen, it's fine. It makes sense. They blew off the angle. Now it's done. You know, I'm an Otis fan, so
are you really? In the future, are you really?
Yeah.
Really? You're going to be a sad fan because what the hell is he going to do?
He's for the working.
Well, they gave him some new music, baby. So I'm not worried about it. I think it's he's going to be all right.
Have him. You know what? He should challenge for a title. Like I legitimately think that Otis should be in the running for a championship.
Really?
Now, granted, that championship is the 24/7 championship.
Thank you. Thank you. Because that's the only title I can see him have.
And I'm okay with that. You know, but I'd be okay with him being a United States champion or Intercontinental champion in the future too.
Do you honestly think he'd be a great United States champion or Intercontinental champion? Like honestly,
for a short run.
For a short run, short as shit. I'm saying, man, Otis is somebody that needs to be with somebody.
Hey, listen, I like him as a face, but man, when that dude turns fucking heel, he's gonna be.
Yeah, he's gonna go and catering and eat all the fucking food.
He's gonna be a monster. He's better than that fuck Lars Sullivan.
Wait. He's gonna be a monster. Tucker,
the cookie monster,
actually going to be a monster. Was the right turn. You don't make Otis a heel.
Well, no, not right now. I'm saying later down the line. I'm not talking about right now.
Ever. Period.
It wouldn't work.
It's not.
It would work.
You think it would work?
Yes, I believe it will work.
All right. I mean, hey, explain yourself. Yes.
Hey, when that finally happens, just remember today, okay?
The only
hold on, time out. You're gonna let us know anyway, so you don't have to tell us.
I will let you know.
The only way that an Otis heel turn would ever work is if they explained it by him getting dropped on his fucking head and he undergoes some sort of a legitimate personality change. He changes the overall timbre of his voice, the way that he communicates, gets rid of the fucking tucky and all of the stupid juvenile fucking horseshit that comes out of his mouth and goes to be a fucking Stone Cold killer. That's not going to happen, though.
Maybe you guys like him better if he teamed up with Cameron Grimes.
I like him better if he's off.
Wait. Stop making the jokes. Lucky, tell us what the fuck you think makes him a viable heel in the future.
You know what? Hey, listen. Everybody likes their form of entertainment, right? Otis entertains me. And in the future, this guy is always known for being such a happy, jolly, go lucky guy. In the future, when he makes the turn, he will be, dude's a brick fucking house. He's fucking huge. He can go. I think he's a future star.
But how? I get what you're
saying. We don't need to waste time on how today. We're talking about Hell in a Cell breakdown. We can get into that on a future show.
Let's get to the show. You just said brick house. Brick house.
Yeah,
that like man is not a brick house, man. That man is as fat as I am. Let's be honest. No, let's
all right, man. Whatever. You guys can have it back, and you're fucking Cameron Grimes too.
Well, I tell you this.
But let me ask you a serious question, Eugene. Do you think Eugene would have ever been a great heel? Not Nick, not the actual wrestler,
no.
But that character as a heel.
Nope.
No.
And Otis will be.
I see more upside for Otis. And I'll leave it at that. There's probably people that agree and people that disagree.
Well, speaking of comedy, did anyone enjoy the pre-show at all? I mean, Gulak was actually talking to Lil Jimmy and then he kicked him out of the ring. I thought that was pretty exciting. But that's, that was, the lowest part of the show.
I won't like Little Jimmy until he turns heel in a couple of years.
Thanks, hey, James. Otis.
All right, look, let's talk about it, right? Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. Let me tell you something.
Wow.
I was, it's not often I get emotionally involved into matches, but that one, I really was. And I was just like, man. It was sold so great that, again, when you just take yourself out of the element of this is theater and you take it for what it is, I was just like, man, these guys right here. I mean, you really were sold that Roman just he just don't like Jay right now, you know. And I just thought that just overall the wrestling was what it was, which wasn't bad, but everything else around that was just on point. Even to the point of after it was over and pretty much he was at the front of the family. What was you guys' take on that particular match that took place? It started off the show. Great way to start the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view.
Wow. I mean, listen. This storyline, they could have, man, they could have done, something quick with it. But what they did with it was just amazing. And they doubled down on it at the end there. I mean, first of all, you got a strap match inside of a Hell in a Cell, too. I mean, they were fucking whipping each other real bad. And then the ending to that match. Wow. With Jimmy coming out and then him and Roman sharing that moment there. And then Roman just snaps on him. boom, puts him in the submission. Jay, you know, ultimately he's reaching for Jay and they lock hands.
Right, yeah. Dude,
they fucking, wow.
Yeah, that
they
was.
They told a story.
Absolutely.
And then he ultimately had to say, I quit, because he wanted to save his brother. And then you saw Roman head up to the top of the ramp, and he got his, you know, his coronation sitting at the head of the table. It was awesome.
They fucked up one aspect of that. They should have taken out Asuka and Seeker right there. Why not?
Man. Listen. For a quick second,
you thought
I thought that might happen, but then at the same time, I was like, why?
Yeah. I thought it would have been overkill if they would have.
Why? Why not? It's wrestling. It's not like this is fucking real life, Lucky. Fucking do it. If you're going to go all the way that much as you're the head of the family, why not kill off your father and his brother?
Damn.
Sure.
Michaels is fucking sadistic. That would have been.
I was just going to say, as far as that ending, like what that meant to me was that the two elders had admitted that he was, you know, that he was the tribal chief.
Yeah.
They didn't have microphones to out and out say that he was the tribal chief. And instead what they did was they coronated him with the lei.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm cool with the fact that he didn't kill them. But dude, I can just simply say, if the show from top to bottom had the different layering and the different character development aspects that this angle has had, yeah, I would be a much happier WWE viewer, and I would not be as disenfranchised with the product as I have been. Point blank.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I agree. I mean, they have, I mean, and there's so much more that you can do with this storyline. You can have Rikishi come out,
yep,
and, you know, and try to talk. You can have him try to talk some sense into Roman.
Why? You've already set up what's happening, which is what we called for weeks ago, and that is the Usos are now going to be his fucking hitman. They have to do what he says.
Yeah.
It's the perfect way. Why keep fighting it? Now you already transferred it. Just go with it now.
Yeah. And you know what it's ultimately leading up to?
Of course.
Him and the Brahma Bull.
I gotta disagree with a lot of the stuff y'all saying, because I feel like, in the words of Matt Michaels, y'all are missing something.
Tell us, enlighten us, Simon Street.
I am. At the end of the day, there are different types of families. There are families that most of us have in common, and then there are warrior families. Okay? In a warrior family, don't roll your damn eyes, Michaels. I see you over there. At the end of the day, there are warrior families, and your hierarchy will be looked at as the pinnacle, the representative of your family tree line. So in this storyline, which was amazing, I love this storyline. This is the best freaking work Roman Reigns has done thus date. That's just my opinion. Plain and simple, we are seeing the best. Now, at the end of the road, I do see that, yeah, he's going to go up against The Rock at some point. I get that. What are we talking about now? Now, the reason why he shouldn't have taken out his elder tribesman is because the signification of what he said in that match. When you at the head of the table, you don't quit. When you at the head of the table, you have to basically think differently. And that was the thing between that separates Roman Reigns from the Usos. The Usos are great, but they'll never be head of the table because they don't have what it takes to be the head of the table, make those hard decisions. Do you see what I'm saying? And that's what separated. And that's why when he went up the top of the ring and he has official coordination, you have the high chieftain that is going to represent. And that's the storyline that they're conveying. I get what Michaels was saying, that, you know, it's not real life. I get it. But at the end of the day, this is art that imitates real life. And I can imagine long time ago, shit was like that. Not everybody's meant to be a chief. Some people are meant to be followers. And Roman showed that in this match. It's amazing.
What are you disagreeing with any of us on? You just said everything that
I think it was mostly disagreeing with you, what you said. I just said that taking out your elder tribesmen would have made no goddamn sense. Do you understand the words that came out of my mouth, Michael?
Wrestling, Jack.
I'm talking about freaking art. You want? No, take your take. No, warriors. Oh my goodness! Of course, I couldn't get you to understand what I'm talking about because you ain't got a warrior bone in your body. But that's okay. Still love you.
Okay. Let's jump over into the Women's SmackDown Championship match.
Whoa.
Man.
Yes.
First off, let me just say, and we already know that they are beautiful women, but they were just on point tonight with their look. I love it. I mean, even Bayley was like, hey, you know, let me talk to you after the show, you know. Let me talk to you.
That's what you got from that match?
No, I'm
creepy.
What'd you say?
That, I ain't glad.
Whatever.
Let me talk to you.
Let me talk to you after the match. All right. No, yeah. No. We're gonna talk about them. I'm just saying, just overall, the cameras. It just loved their appearance tonight. It was awesome. The match.
What you're saying is you would like to be the cameraman.
There you go. Zoom in, zoom out. But the match, man, on to another level, man. They pulled out all types of tricks tonight, man. At first, the camera angle was just so perfect on how Sasha took that fall going through the Kindle stick onto the stairs. I actually thought, man, that looked like that really there was some damage really done there. Even the replay, I mean, everything was just done so well. I mean, you guys, what's your take on that? That match, I mean, and shout out to Sasha, right? Actually getting the title, which I didn't think was going to happen.
You didn't think that was going to happen?
Not tonight. I didn't think it was going to happen tonight.
You didn't think that was going to happen tonight?
I didn't.
Oh, her attire, the color of her attire kind of gave it away. But I will say this. Shout out to both women. They put on a spectacular performance. Mm-hmm. You know, Sasha being in these Hell in a Cell matches, you know, could call a lot of stuff. And I mean, she just sells tremendously, right? And for a second there, I didn't think she was going to get the title. But you know what? She did the chair move and stomped her out and did all that in the submission and was, you know, stomping on the chair. It was brilliant. I mean, it was a 5-star match.
So you're saying that Sasha called the match?
Listen, Sasha being the veteran of Hell in a Cell matches.
Shut the fuck up.
I could see. Whatever.
No, because
you're on a whole new level of pissivity tonight.
Must be the background. Heels call the match, buddy.
Hey.
Those two who know each other. It doesn't matter who the fuck the person calling the match is, because most likely they're both calling shit. Sasha did one thing that was very, 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 very reckless, and that was taking that fucking... She took a chair shot to the head by allowing Bayley to throw her into that chair like that. That's like fucking the most dangerous thing they did out of all this shit. But other than that, fucking the match was great.
I wouldn't have did the part where Sasha ran and jumped on the ladder to do the knee. I was like, dude, you could have easily slipped or your feet would have went through one of the holes. Anything bad could have happened there.
But you know what? And I'll tell you what. When I saw that spot, because you've never really seen that spot before, I knew that they had to practice that spot before doing, you know, any of that.
Yeah.
That's my belief.
I'm sure they practice it, but you know.
You tell me something different,
but when you're in a live setting, anything could go wrong if something's not set up correctly. Yeah, and that was true. That was my worry.
Very true.
Yeah.
That was a hell of a spot. Man, that was good. Wow.
And also,
things did go wrong. On the kendo stick spot, there were supposed to be kendo sticks to help break that fall a little bit more. When that first one popped out, it was like, good luck, here we go. So, even that chair shot in the corner like that, you want to protect yourself more, but when you're in the moment, you don't get a chance to protect yourself. Shit happens. You might get yelled at backstage because you're not supposed to be banging your head on shit anymore, but you're right. I mean, that ladder spot, she could have broke her leg.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then I also wanted to shout out just how the match started. Wasn't that pretty awesome how she was able to kick that chair and it went right out of the outside area? That was, dude.
It's good timing.
Yeah.
They must have really rehearsed that one because that could have went, that could have fallen flat.
Yeah.
Good. That was incredible. That might be my favorite Hell in a Cell by the ladies. Not overall in totality, but that might be my favorite one by the ladies. The one with her and Charlotte was very good too, but this one was very, very well done.
Yeah.
They took some chances and it paid off.
Steve,
what's amazing match. Honestly, out of all of the three, out of all of the Hell in a Cell matches themselves, this was far and away the one that I was the most attached to. And it was the best overall Hell in a Cell match. And quite frankly, one of the better ones for the last couple of years, in my opinion.
Mm. You know, what made this pay-per-view different than other pay-per-views, and even with not having a full announcement of other matches, that everything that was on the card had some kind of story through line to it.
Yep.
The first time we've seen it in fucking forever.
In years.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that there was a lot of pressure on them for this match. And the reason why I say that is because when you have a history of having one of the greatest matches, I would say not just NXT history, but as a women's match really of all time, it's in top five, with Sasha and Bayley NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. It's a lot of pressure, a lot of buildup, a lot of expectation, not only the fans, but, you know, just only for, you know, Sasha and Bayley. What they put on today, they not only showed to me and other people that they can handle that pressure, which most of us already knew that, but it put on a hell of a show. And I'm happy with the result. Obviously, I'm a huge Sasha Banks fan, but I like the way that it was won, even to the point at the end where she didn't even look at the title at first. She kept her eyes on Bayley. This is a way different Sasha than what we're used to. This is a Sasha that's focused. I do believe that the company is pushing for a stronger performing Sasha. I do believe that she's not going to be cursed like she has before, to where she's not having long title reigns. I feel like she'll have a good title reign. And I'm super excited to see what Sasha's going to do next. Super excited, super happy. My household was excited on cloud 9 to 10 when she won. And those are the moments that I think all of us can agree. That's why we love this sport. We love it for these moments. And they did. Thank you, Sasha and Bayley. And thank you for women's wrestling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's get into what Matt Michaels finally got his wish on. The WWE Championship match.
I thought you were talking about Elias getting hit with the guitar.
No.
Oh. I thought it was the moment where Lashley snuffed the Retribution.
That's what I said in the beginning of why those matches were boring. Like, it was something that could have been on Raw. You know, it was boring. But I get
the Elias one wasn't boring, man.
I mean, I didn't big time care for it. I'm not saying it was shit, but it, for me personally, my opinion was I really wasn't invested in watching it. I watched it, but I wasn't invested.
All right.
I'm more invested in buying his album.
which you can't find on
iTunes. I know. Right now. I looked and then you showed it.
Yeah.
You went to Amazon too? It's
supposed to come out tomorrow.
You know what sucks? You know what really sucks? I didn't look much into, maybe you guys did, but the performance he had on Monday Night Raw, I was impressed. I was like, I was actually duped, if I could say so. I was like, well, I might actually want to buy this damn album. See what the hell's going on. I was duped, apparently.
Nice job, King Lucky.
All right, let's get into it. Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre, let's go. What's your take?
Good match. It's good.
Are you happy to have? Are you happy to have the belt off of Drew?
Listen, Drew. To me, I don't have a problem with him like Michaels does.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think Drew represented well. You know, it sucks for him that, you know, he didn't get his WrestleMania moment in front of fans. He probably will get a WrestleMania moment in front of fans. You know, and it'll be just dude is a stud, man. You know, I like the. On the mic, in the ring, I had no issue with it. So I had no, you know, I wasn't rooting for him to lose the title. I'm more so happy that Randy Orton got another title.
Understandable. Okay. Anybody else want to talk about this exciting match? I mean, this is, we have a new WWE champion.
I mean, it was a good match. You know, like you said, the one thing that stood out to me in this match that we've seen this before, is Randy going up at the top and then going back down, and they're like on that one side. I knew someone was going to drop, obviously, but I was like, we've seen this.
Insane.
Did you really? Were you moved by that bump? Because I swear I've seen that bump quite a few times in the last.
No matter how many times you see it, fuck, man, that's.
But you don't see it by a guy that's Drew's size.
Yeah,
I will give you that. I was interested by that, but maybe it's just me. I it wasn't 100% underwhelming, but I felt like, okay, I've seen it before. Somebody's gonna fall. Looks like it's gonna be Drew. Okay, he fell. All right.
No, I definitely carried more weight than that with me. I was like, holy shit!
You were crying? You were crying?
And no, I wasn't crying. I was scratching my cheek there just in case. You needed to know.
Okay,
but,
I'm wondering.
But the fact that they piped in the holy shits was pretty crazy.
That was cool. That was cool.
That was, you know, that made it even more. And the bump itself was just insane, but that made it even more impactful.
With Mick Foley setting the goal so high with the Taker match and him going over, do we ever think we will see anyone top that or come equal to that in the future? Because every time we do see two people that high, we never know if we're about to have one of those moments again.
The only way you can top that is death.
No. The only person
that can no top in this.
Hold on. If ever that was a way, in fact, there's only one man that might actually be able to get through the legality so it doesn't get back is Shane McMahon. He's going to be the only person that...
Well, Shane has leaked off of that.
I know, but I'm saying to beat what Nick Foley presented. No. I'm saying there's only one person. I know he won't, but I'm saying
nobody will.
Whoa. Shane McMahon beat it.
Do you really think he did?
Yes, because think about it. First of all, the Foley thing was... Well, the Foley thing is simple like this. It wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, dumb luck didn't happen.
Aggression of the match wasn't supposed to happen like that. So you're assuming, you're putting a bar on something that realistically no one should ever fucking do.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, do a spot off the cage to the point where you barely got the rotation through, you were barely protected, you get wheeled out, then you decide to come back down because you're out of your mind. You know, you climb up on top of a cage, which was not reinforced like it is, you know, nowadays. I mean, after they did that, they started reinforcing that cage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not comparable. Shane, the reason Shane had the best like moment, fall, whatever, is because Shane actually was dropping a fucking elbow.
Yeah, he did.
You had to hit your target. If he would have missed it by that much, it would have been fucking tragic.
And that's why I was also saying too, if anybody could have, with the dangerousness of what Foley did, obviously it was unprecedented, but I'm saying, like, I could see one of the McMahons, obviously Shane, finding some kind of legality way to, you know, to assume all whatever the hell would happen or to take that crazy risk. I'm just thinking of the liability reason per se. But yes, you're right, Michaels. There will never be nobody that will top Mick Foley, I believe. I mean, unless it's like a sad tragedy, which I wouldn't want that.
No, I'm saying, well, first of all, a sad tragedy is not topping.
Yeah. No.
What do you mean it's not topping? I'm saying that if somebody had tried it, it would be tragic. That's what I'm saying. Case,
that the only thing that can top Mick Foley for you is seeing someone die.
Again, that's what I meant. Like, no one wants to see that. I'm just saying, like, no one wants to see that.
All right, let's jump back over into it, though. Sissy Steve or Matt Michaels, Drew McIntyre, no longer our WWE champion. We have Randy Orton. What's your take?
I'm on board with it. Okay. So I think Drew did very admirably in what was an elevation move. They took Drew, a guy that, you know, they had all this expectation level for in the previous time that he was with the company, unceremoniously let go. It's one hell of a redemption arc when you look at it, because he really did go back. He went to the indies, started out from the bottom. I remember watching him on a couple of like WrestleCon Super Show during WrestleMania week 1 year. Mm-hmm. And he embraced where he had to start from. So he was on the mountain, you know, he was on the side of the mountain, and then he got booted off and realized that he had to start all the way down at the bottom and climb his way back up. And when he finally reached the peak at WrestleMania, it was fulfilling for a lot of people that saw him go through that journey. And, you know, I think that he did as good of a job as anybody could have expected because of the uncertainty of what we've been dealing with in the name of COVID and, you know, our world today.
Yeah.
So I think that he did an extremely fine job, as, you know, carrying the banner and carrying that championship. But I am excited to see what Randy Orton does, because as we all know, when Randy Orton is motivated about a storyline or an angle or something, he pulls it off extremely well and he's all in with it. So I'm just hoping that this title reign, that he is all in on it.
Well, we already saw that. I mean, with this angle, he definitely was all in.
Right.
There's no doubt. I'm assuming there has to be a blueprint of what's going on for the next, you know, couple of months or potentially leading up to WrestleMania. You know, everyone wants to be a Meltzer and assume that it's going to be Edge and Orton at WrestleMania. Okay.
isn't that supposedly the plan according to Meltzer, though?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay.
Profit Meltzer.
Yeah, I think, you know, first off, twofold on Drew. Number one, it was a chance for him to be put in a prominent role and actually get a chance to see what he could do. Did he do a horrible job? No. Did he do a spectacular job? No. He did a good job. The reason I say that is this. Steve, you like to go into ratings, right? And one of the big ratings that you've noticed since COVID-19, since WrestleMania, is that Raw is doing shit numbers. He was your champ the whole fucking time.
Yep.
So I think logically for now, good move for them, because Orton is a a name already established, and it might draw more eyes to the product. You'll also then – the thing with Orton is that you can go either way. He's spectacular heel, but you know that the audience likes him, so he, you know, has been a face in the past. If you're looking at elevating The Miz, that might be your way to go. Have Miz feud with him and have Miz be the heel and Orton be the face. But it's right now it's kind of head scratching on what they're actually going to do. You know, we'll see, because I can't think off the top of my head, I can't think of who the next in line is in terms of Raw faces. Especially after the shakeup. So
yeah.
I don't know. We might see Drew and Randy again at Survivor Series, and maybe the belt gets thrown back.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that is Hell in a Cell. Overall, I think it was a good pay-per-view. It looked like we kind of all agree with that. So, you know, good job on WWE for entertaining us there. Let's take a look at Raw and SmackDown of this past week. Anything unrelated to the pay-per-view that should be mentioned you guys want to throw out there from either show?
Man. You know, I'm going to keep it short and sweet.
But, hallelujah.
But
I thought you were going to recap both shows from top to bottom. Like you do every week.
Hey, you know what? Welcome to the kingdom, baby.
Wow, you came up with that yourself. But, I'm proud.
Listen. The way they started Raw was excellent. Okay? Alexa Bliss in the ring, the red lights, the Fiend. Even I'm okay with maybe the Retribution coming in. But why did they have them feud with the Fiend for that short moment and have him take all of them out? You've been building this up for months. These guys have zero credibility. That you already saw at the pay-per-view, they lost. I mean, what was the point of that? They lose every week on Raw. What's the point of that? So it's just, it's pointless to me.
Can I interject?
Yeah.
Because I see where you're going. And I thought the same way until I had an epiphany for myself. What if the Retribution merely needs a little bit of Fiend sprinkling seasoning? Now, as we've seen in the past, the Fiend, anybody that he decides to go up against, gets transformed. They become darker. They become more sadistic, right? Let me in. That's the whole phrase. What if, at the end of the day, it might be a stretch. Let's just say the Fiend gets a hold of, you know, Aladdin, a.k.a. Kama Mustafa, and, you know, actually does what the Fiend does. Or maybe they do something different with the Fiend and he gets a hold of the Retribution. Don't mute me, Mike Michaels. Don't mute me, because I know you're going to touch that button.
We got to stop for a second here, because you just called Mustafa Ali Kama Mustafa.
Yep.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Anyways, Mustafa Ali. Anyways, besides the point, you stopped me for that. Come on.
Well, because anyone listening might go, wait a minute, when did the Fiend encounter Kama Mustafa?
Well, yeah. You see, he did that and then turned him into the Godfather.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what it was.
There you go.
So now they're just gonna retcon the Fiend into every single turn in WWE history.
You'll go back in time and do it. Now, thank you for the correction. No, I'm just saying, what if there was something that they did that in May? Because let's be honest, the obvious is here. The Retribution is weak sauce. It's weak. How many of y'all think that the Retribution is actually something to be feared on Raw?
Well, not now, especially they get their ass whooped every week.
Okay. So it took you this past Monday night to realize what I've been realizing for the last 2 weeks.
So high on them. So what you guys are looking at it through is through, obviously, Simon, you're projecting, all right? You're thinking, well, what if The Fiend, this rubs off, etc. Lucky, you're going, man, they didn't do anything with them. What you're forgetting is one thing, and that is the Hurt Business has essentially been established solely by kicking the Retribution's ass. So you got to go at some point, you got to go, all right, whoever came up with the idea, whether maybe it was Heyman, right? Heyman gets switched out, and now you're kind of stuck with this, you know, something that kind of was getting started that they're just kind of finishing off, whatever. The idea, though, is that Mustafa Ali is not a fucking superstar. You know, he's not your put the title on him big name, right? So what you're looking at essentially is some group that the Hurt Business could actually work with. And that's what they're there for right now. The fact that they pulled them off SmackDown, that they stopped those angles and stuff, they're there for one specific reason. That is to put over the Hurt Business. Once that's over, you can probably see that they're going to get pared down most likely, and you're going to see maybe like a tag team merge out of it or something like that. You're going to see these guys drop out. Period.
Yeah, you have a point. You have a point. It just sucks because at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I get your science, but I would prefer the Retribution to be a little bit bigger than what they are. I'm now getting tired of seeing the Hurt Business run shop over Retribution Monday after Monday after Monday. I'm tired of it. So whatever needs to change, I hope it changes.
MVP, boom. MVP said it best. They hoes. They the Hurt Business. Hoes.
But I guess.
But you're missing out. You're missing out on one simple factor, and that is, in wrestling and in storytelling, you can't just have everyone be this fucking super empowered thing.
Of course.
I get that, but I just feel like there's nothing, and again, it's just me. I feel like there's nothing special about Retribution. I felt even this past Monday, what would have been great for the Hurt Business to say is what we're going to do is we're now going to unmask you and expose you for the phonies and the weak sauces that you are and go by East Flapjack, whatever his name is, or, you know, and unmask him. I felt like that could carry on for maybe three more Monday nights.
Yeah, but
I'm bored.
But you know what? Here's the issue I have with this. The people that are in that group, like there's a couple people in that group that I'm really high on, like Dominik Dijakovic and Mia Yim. Like, what to make of their careers after? I mean, you know, it's still short. It's one angle.
Their careers will be fine, man.
They'll be fine.
That's why they're in these characters, because when I see it, I'm not thinking of those people. I'm not thinking of them at all. Until you
say except Mia Yim. Except for Mia Yim.
And no, I forget she's fucking part of it, man.
Well, yeah, because she ain't got no one to fight. And so then every you time have the men come out, she roll out.
And then you have someone like me who don't read any dirt sheets or who can't look around the shape of the head of a mask to go, oh, that's Dijakovic, because I didn't know until you just told me right now. No, I'm just being honest.
I get Dijakovic, but you can't sit here and tell me, in fact, you didn't know that was Mia Yim.
No, I knew that was Mia.
Okay, all right, I'm about to say. Okay.
But not, I don't know everybody in here. I'm just saying.
No, I get you with that. I get you with that.
Yeah. So
there you go.
Once again, your biggest factor here is that you're looking at it through the eyes of an adult male. The fact of the matter is that if you put that in front of the eyes of kids, these guys are beating up these super villain type things. You know, if you watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, who the fuck was the guy with the hockey mask? You know?
It was, damn, I can't think of his name. Whatever. Slade.
Is that Casey
Slade.
Jones?
Casey Jones. There he goes. Casey Jones.
But, you know, like, that's the type of thing you're looking at. Look at Cobra G.I. Joe, right? You had you had a couple standout villains, but the Cobra soldiers were different, you know, bad guys who just, their job was to get beat up.
Mm-hmm. You know what I really want to do, and I'm being honest, guys, when I say this. Matt Michaels, I believe you when you say the product is presented for kids. I have a really hard time believing that 100%. I would love to, at some point, freaking interview 25 fucking kids and find out, like, show them clips of Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, and just really wonder, because I got to be honest, I got kids, and they get excited seeing the big names. They don't get excited over no fucking Retribution. They ask, like, why is he wearing a mask?
But again,
now, are we talking about 80s kids, 90s kids? Because these kids, they're not into that shit. I feel, my opinion.
Anyway, it's much easier when that happens.
You say that because you ain't got fucking kids. So how the fuck would you know? You don't even hang around kids or watch kids or babysit. I'm just saying.
I don't also hang out with, 15-year-old or 14-year-old high school kids.
You can spin it around any way you want. There's people that watch this show who
Anyway.
And I'm just going to keep unmuting myself. I'm going to keep doing it. Let's do this the whole fucking show.
Well, will you let me fucking finish my sentence?
You didn't let me finish my sentence. So keep going. Keep muting. Please. Mute me again. Come on, Michaels. Show me your balls and mute me. Come on. Mute me.
Oh, don't worry.
Oh, you're going to kick me off? That what you're going to do now? That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Can I just finish my sentence? That's what I wanted to know. The muting's childish.
For fuck. Sake, say something then.
I'm waiting.
Jesus Christ.
So, anyways, all I was merely saying is I understand what you're saying, Michaels, because I do feel that the product is presented to kids. But every time that I get opportunity to speak to kids, because I am a mentor in my community, by the way, that's why I'm around younger people. I always do ask them about wrestling because they know I like wrestling. I wonder sometimes, do they really tangibly see that, such as you mentioned, Retribution being these monsters, supervillains, if you will call it. I feel like they don't see that. And I feel like WWE is missing that point. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
So the fact of the matter is very simple. The idea is this. You're saying that, you know, why do they wear masks or something like that being a good response? They want to see the big names, the big stars. Okay, so let me ask you this. Does it matter if a guy like Divakovic or anyone else who is essentially a mid to lower card person comes up and instead of having something for them to do, you just have them be themselves and have the Hurt Business beat them? Right? Big deal. At least here, you're giving something where you try to make something. Listen, they're making as best chicken salad out of chicken shit as they can do. Right? Mm-hmm. So what you're looking at is essentially this. You have these mask guys. They're obvious villains. Right? You have them beat up by the Hurt Business, who the Hurt Business were fucking villains. But now they're faces, but they're still villains. So you see that, but basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to make them the main event people that your kids want to see. But to do that, they have to be fucking lower card to nobody people, right? That's what wrestling is. We can't just keep thinking that, oh, you know, I want to see this done bigger and this done better. Sometimes you just got to go, logically speaking, to convey the point and build what you want to build. That's what you have to do. Right? The same. Let's, you know, SmackDown. If you look at Otis, who Lucky thinks has upside, all right, you split up Otis and Tucker. What do you do to make Tucker now kind of stand out if you want to give him a little bit of a rub, because you already know where Otis is going. Okay. Otis is Bushwhackers 2020. Tucker, you can actually potentially get something out of Tucker even if it's just a dickhead fucking heel, that could essentially elevate guys like the Hurt Business. You know, you gotta do something with these people that you want to make main event. If you don't build the Hurt Business to that main event status, then guess what? They become the guys jobbing out to the other guys.
I agree with you on that 100%, but I really feel
it costs you a lot more money than, you know, bringing up NXT guys and putting them under masks.
No, and I get that. It's just, I still feel like Retribution is weak sauce, and it's by choice. It's by design at this point. Unmask them. I'm just saying, if the product's for the kids don't give a shit to have masks.
Why?
Why? Because you can build with the face, even if they're a low to mid-car tier or even below that. I'm just saying, maybe it's the leader. No offense.
Listen, I will say this, that Michael's logic on this one is right on, because if you keep them under the mask, you can bury them all you want, because to Impact's point, he had no clues.
Exactly.
It's true.
But now they see, here's the point where I think you, Simon Street, are conflicted, is because they made them such a big fucking deal to begin with. They created this angle as if they were so huge. Now they are just reduced to being hoes every week. So, you know what? I've already taken, I never liked the angle to begin with. I kind of was like, oh, this is cool when Ali, you know, joined the group, but it's a wash now. And, you know, I'm living with it. I'm fine.
Put you on that one, man. It's boring.
Well, let me ask y'all this. What anything else that happened on Raw, SmackDown outside of Retribution that you think deserves a mention?
Shorty G, baby. Get that fucking angle out of here. It's about
which one? Which one?
Put some respect on that man's name.
Which one? What'd you say? Mikey? I mean, not Michael's King Luggy?
Fucking Shorty G.
Yeah.
Shorty G. It's time. You know, Vince had this whole concept that he had for this guy. Came out with fucking basketball shorts, all kind of bullshit gimmicks. And now, hopefully, they can do right by him. Somebody mentioned him going back to NXT. Yeah. It might have been you, Steve.
Yeah.
But, dude, give this guy the proper run that he deserves. He can go. I mean, granted, he can't talk on the mic, right?
What the fuck ever.
There we go.
Yeah, doesn't matter at this point. Dude can't talk on the mic. But give him the proper run. Let him be who he was. And let's just get over it. But I thought, I'm happy to see that that's done and over with.
Move him to fucking NXT. Put him with Tim Thatcher. Print money. Have a nice day.
Hold on. I have a better one. Have it be the sequel to Main Event that was on Netflix, NXT, and have Shorty G be the star of that film. Because that's about the only way that I'm going to be sold on anything he does in the future. No offense towards him. And it's not his height. It's just they garbaged a good talent in him. And yeah, maybe going to NXT might help some of that, but man, it's going to, you need to chill for like a good minute, then come back and be totally something opposite.
Listen,
because NXT fucked you.
6 months from now, y'all are going to be going, man, he was supposed to be so great on AEW. Seriously, man. He is, once again, it's like y'all are fighting for every single fucking person to be a goddamn fucking superstar.
Not everybody.
I'm not fighting for him to be a superstar at all.
Basketball shorts. No. Call him, he's fucking already short. Call him Shorty G.
I'm only merely saying that.
Get it? Because he's short.
Such good shit.
I think we can all agree that every once. Actually, I'm lying. A lot of times, Vince McMahon, and we'll just say because he's the representative of WWE, truly shits on a competitor or a personality to where it could follow them the rest of their career. This is one of them, in my opinion. I feel bad for the guy. I really fucking do. And I hope the best, maybe going to AEW and being something totally different. I don't know if that will work, but it can't be any worse than what he's gone through the last 5 years. Anywhere. He go to ROH. He go to Impact.
I was going to say, yeah, if he would go to ROH, fuck, even New Japan. And
that might be better.
And I think that he would do extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but think about it in these terms, man. The 3MB was fucking horrible.
I knew you were going to say that.
Fucking horrible.
They were. But look at him now.
And most importantly, please, please, please do not feel sorry for Chad Gable, because his pocketbook does not feel sorry for you.
Mm. That is true. Mm. That is true. Very good point. I'll give you that. The only other thing I will say Monday night was great is I really did like the Elias concert. I am being honest when I say I like the song. I thought it was going to be garbage at first, and it surprised me to the point to where I think that that should be the new song for SmackDown.
Anyway, so just to circle back on the retribution thing, the only thing that I have an issue with as far as retribution is if you've got people wearing like hard plastic masks and shit like that, why as an opponent are you physically hitting the mask? Wouldn't you change your offense just a slight bit, maybe do some body blows? It makes no sense when you got somebody in there with a fucking Jason mask from Wish and the people are in there like trying to beat the shit out of this guy through a hard plastic mask. I can only imagine what it's going to be like for, spoiler alert, DJ, Dio Madden as Mace getting the shit punched out of him in his Predator mask.
I don't think you just spoiled anything for DJ, because I don't think he knows who the fuck
he has no idea. He has no idea. Bless his heart. Bless his heart, though.
Sorry. But nonetheless.
I wish I could be that way. I honestly wish I could be that way. I don't read Dirt Sheets a lot, but I allow myself to listen to the likes of King Lucky and other people who actually read Dirt Sheets, because I do find it entertaining. But I do find it entertaining. I wish I could be innocent and go through a pay-per-view or any show and just totally be surprised. I wish I could.
All right. Anything else? SmackDown, want to mention anything? You're good?
Bianca Belair. Dude, looks like $1 million. You know, and she can go. She can get on the mic. That's I see within the next year her being a champion on a major brand.
Yeah, I give you that. All right. Anybody else want to say anything else? SmackDown? I don't know. Going once, going twice. Sold. Okay. Bound for Glory was the next pay-per-view that took place this weekend. And I got to tell you, I was excited to watch it. What I didn't know, and, you know, I always was under the assumption that Slammiversary was Impact Wrestling's WrestleMania. But apparently, Bound for Glory is their big show. So that was new for me. I was like, okay, that's good to know. So they, you know, that's why they brought a lot of the bells and the whistles. For the pre-show, who got inducted into the Hall of Fame? Ken Shamrock. And of course, what made the noise, the news during that whole thing were some of the people who came to give him his props, to induct him. Bret the Hitman Hart was on video giving him a shout out. Mick Foley was also there giving him his props. And of course, The Rock is who inducted him. Awesome video, just kind of watching it. It was interesting to see, of course, ex-WWE or WWE guys on Impact programming. But at the same time, I think seeing something like that is really cool. I hate the idea of always pretending like you can't say another company's name or another person name, and like these other brands can't exist. I know why they do it, but it just never makes sense. So to see kind of them bring that together and to give Kim Shamrock his props was awesome. So that was during the pre-show leading up to that.
Let me ask you guys this on that.
Sure.
So, did Ken Shamrock deserve to be in the TNA Hall of Fame for his spectacular career in TNA?
No.
What it probably comes down to, and you guys will know the answer to that because I haven't watched TNA and Impact that long to even know. Nope. But my guess is they probably run it out of people who to give, you know, these awards to, and maybe end of a big name, and probably thought, hey, that was the time to give it to Ken.
You said the word big name.
Yeah.
It's not that they're running out of people or this or that. Basically, it's who can we approach that would probably say yes. And in this case, you were able to get, because Ken has a lot of respect, you get the WWE guys to come on your program, even by video, and it gets a buzz.
Yeah.
So that's what their Hall of Fame is.
Sure.
But I will be honest, it does make the question that maybe they should kind of restructure their Hall of Fame a little bit to a certain degree. Because the only reason why I said no for Ken Shamrock is when you look at the list is Jeff Jarrett, Kurt Angle, Sting, Team 3D, Gail Ken, Abyss. You know, those are just to name some people.
There's only one person on that list that I say legitimately belongs to that Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Which one would you say? Because Jeff Jarrett was a huge part of TNA history. Kurt Angle, for the most part, came in because I remember the day when Kurt Angle premiered. You know, these are people that actually worked within TNA enough. Now, if you had to say the right when they were inducted to the Hall of Fame, maybe along the same lines what we're saying with Ken Shamrock. But I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, Ken Shamrock, how long has he been a part of Impact, like active roster? And I'm not taking nothing away from him. He is amazing.
Hardly at all.
September was when he joined. So
yeah, that's all I'm saying. My account on is based on time served.
No, he was the first TNA champion. That's why they're doing it. That's it. His title reign was basically nothing. Abyss is the only person who belongs in that Hall of Fame.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Restructure it to really, and I think it's hard to say to restructure something you've already started, but I'm saying if you did allow to do that, explain more of what it means to be inducted in the Hall of Fame. Does that make sense? Like actually open that up?
Honestly, dude, their Hall of Fame doesn't make any sense, period.
Well, it's true. They did do it a long time ago because WWE was doing their Hall of Fame, so they needed to. I remember that.
Let me ask this then. Does Ken Shamrock go into WWE's Hall of Fame?
I think he should. I think he should. I think that if you think of, especially with the huge amount of success that we've had people from MMA come in successfully to WWE, Ken Shamrock was the first prototype or the first person to really actually kind of do it. That I can think of, I could be wrong. And for that alone, I'm going to be honest with you, it said it can't be done. You know, and from that standpoint, he pioneered that.
So considering who else is in the WWE Hall of Fame,
like
Coco Beware and on that level, Ken Shamrock absolutely is a Hall of Famer.
Does this now push him back since he just went into – Impact or TNA?
I don't think so. No. If anything, I think him, even if he wasn't in the Hall of Fame, the work that he did do in Impact from the episodes I was able to watch, I think he looked pretty good for his age. I mean, say it was, I think it resurfaced his name a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we see him show up in WWE for a short stint of time, whatever capacity that may be. But I do think he is deserving to be in the WWE. Well, I said in what capacity? I don't want any more oldies coming in getting beat up and battered. Listen,
I think they honor him, but I think him getting into this Hall of Fame pushed back, you know, any consideration for WWE's Hall of Fame for a few years. So,
not necessarily.
He's right on schedule. I would say. I put it like this: Ken Shamrock in the next 5 years for sure.
It all depends on what WWE is going to be doing for their Hall of Fame. I mean, with the pandemic, they didn't even have one this past year, so they got that whole class to induct it. So,
all right. Well, moving on Bound for Glory.
Well, thank you, host King Lucky. We got the
that wasn't it.
We have the
X. Oh, that was the
X Divisional title is how they started off the show. Six-person scramble, that was with TJP, Chris Bay, Trey Miguel, Jordan Grayson, Willie Mack, and Rohit Raju, of course. And, you know, they built the story up really well because since Rohit has been champion, he's been doing everything to avoid giving up that belt. Someone beats him, you know, it's like, hey, you didn't beat this person who I beat last time. Go after them. And then after they beat that person, and he says, well, hey, you know, that person deserved one, but maybe if you go after them, you know, dodging and just ducking everything he possibly could. So even in this particular match, started off again, just excellent. Raheem, when the bell rings, they go after Raheem. Of course, he jumps out of the ring. When he decides to get back in the ring, they start to attack him. He's still ducking. He's still ducking and missing and diving, and they're still missing him. And you know, he's hiding in the back. He is doing everything he can to still not take a loss. And he seems to only pop up when it looks like that there's about to be a chance of someone getting pinned. Well, all of that worked, guys, and Rohit Raju is still the X-Divisional champ, and he's doing a really good job with doing that since he's been in this role. Shout out to him also. I heard was on Sports Illustrated as well. I don't think the cover, but just, you know, being inside as well. So he's definitely moving up. Friend of the show, we interviewed him, but Raheem is just a really cool guy. Just seeing where he's at right now is awesome, and he looks great as well. But the storyline with him is just awesome because he's just doing everything to duck and dive, and he still comes out on top. We'll go over next to the Call Your Shot Gauntlet match, where, hey, the title, you can go after any title you want. So there was a lot of people in this match. It was kind of like a Royal Rumble type of setup. Every 1 minute, somebody comes to the ring. But the biggest stipulation to that was if Heath or Rhino, if for some reason either one of them do not win, okay, Heath never gets the contract, and Rhino pretty much puts his job on the line, so he loses his contract. So, of course, that was the big storyline out of everybody that was in there. But there was a couple of surprises, guys. Sean Daivari. How about him? You know Daivari? Yeah, that guy showed up to wrestle. How about Swoggle? Anybody remember Swoggle?
Yeah.
Yeah, Swoggle popped up. And, of course, the big name of them all, Cowboys James Storm.
All right. How about your damn life?
Yeah, so he showed up as well. And again, overall, it was a good match. What was pretty funny is, as you guys know, they have this big wedding that's coming up for Bravo. And I told you last week that Fala Ba ran off with Hernandez cash, okay? And he still has that cash, by the way. And a few people believe he has it, but he hasn't fully showed it. He always walking around with his hand on his chest because this wad of cash is just kind of, you know, sitting under his shirt, you know, in his chest area. So when he wrestles, he almost wrestles with one hand on the wad of cash so he don't drop out. Well, you know, hey, Hernandez is now, of course, kind of figured this whole situation out, and of course throws him out of this ring for the gauntlet match. And you know, as far as Fala Ba's concerned, he don't care, because guess what, he still got that big wad of cash, so he just took it and ran. And Hernandez, who apparently could have had a opportunity of winning this shot of any title in Impact Wrestling, just decided to just go over the ropes and walk out so he could just go get his money. So Hernandez had other things on his mind. He wasn't thinking about trying to win that particular belt. It came down to four people in the ring, guys. Sami Callihan, Rhino, Heath, and James Storm. Who got thrown out? Out of that four, of course, Heath. Heath got thrown out. So what about this guy now? Injured. Say it again.
He got injured legitimately.
Oh, that's true. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, he got – and then it came down to Sami and Rhino. And now this match, which is like a rumble, you have to get tossed over, now actually becomes a one-on-one match where you have to become pinned. So now you have that match going, and of course, Rhino takes the win for that. So I thought that was pretty, you know, it's pretty cool to have that as a storyline where he gets to keep his job. But what I thought was most interesting is, well, what belt is he going to go after that anybody, let's say, cares enough to see? You know, I mean, it's Rhino. I mean, nothing against Rhino. Rhino looks good and everything. But I mean, I'm like, ah.
Right. We'll go after the TNA championship.
Which, speaking of TNA, they had the cinematic match between Moose and EC3 as some undisclosed...
what I like to call Impact Underground.
You know, that sounds a lot better.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah, pretty much.
No strippers?
Yeah, they didn't have none of that.
There was a...
There was no dice games either.
Yeah, there was a couple of people surrounding the ring. They had masks on. They all was wearing EC3 sweat jackets, and they were all just kind of beat on the ring as they wrestled. So, you know, that right there was interesting. But I guess I finally figured out this whole control your narrative thing, because I've been kind of confused at what the overall storyline is about. And I guess the whole idea was the TNA title, which is funny because Moose used to always claim that, you know, the most prestigious title, you know, in the business and all that. Well, EC3 kind of played that whole idea of, look, if you're going to roll with this belt, you got to be what TNA is about. You got to be about that, you know, that dirty, going hardcore, that grit, going all in. Not this, you know, someone handing me a title type, you know, because now that makes the TNA belt useless. It's not anything. This belt is something. And you, Moose, can be what TNA is about. You need to find that narrative within you. And I guess with that whole storyline, EC3 got his ass whooped by Moose, because Moose, I guess, eventually figured that out, and he ripped EC3 a new one. So yeah, that's pretty interesting. I mean, for someone who comes in, and I guess it is kind of different, right? Because everyone that, when you have someone new come from a different company, they always throw the title, no matter what company it is. They push them all the way to the top. They win everything. It's like, whatever. But EC3 didn't come in this way. He came in, you know, hasn't had many matches, but he, you know, the few times he's had to wrestle, he's gotten his ass beat, you know. So pretty interesting how they come out with that storyline. But EC3 did win that. He got his title back. Let's see what that title is going to do for him going forward. There was the...
Oh, what?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Sleep on any news.
Yeah, I know. Not much here. There was the Eddie Edwards match against the Hall of Famer of Ken Shamrock, and Ken Shamrock won that. So nothing big there. Four-way tag team title. The North, Ace Austin, Madman Fulton, the Good Brothers, and Motor City Machine Guns were all battling. And man, look who won. They got the belts back. The North.
Yeah.
Man, I was shocked. You know, I thought maybe Motor City was going to continue to have those belts. Maybe even the Good Brothers, because again, that's what they do. They throw the belts on to the guys that come. But the North, who just lost it a few months ago, got it back. So, you know, shout out to them for pulling that out. Knockouts Championship. It was supposed to be Deonna Purrazzo versus Kylie Rae. Interestingly, you know, Kylie Rae's music play and she doesn't come out. So
hey, they already got possessed by Sue Young, buddy.
We call that a no call, no show, I guess. So it became an open challenge. Deonna said anybody wants to come out. And of course, it wasn't Susie that came out, it was Sue Young, who came out. And it was a really good match between the two. Bucks. And, you know, overall, Sue Young end up being your new knockout women's champion. So
with that panic switch.
Yeah. You know, all in all, I would tell you, with their match and Sasha and Bayley match, the women's, man, the championship division is on a whole nother level. If we can only get our other AEW to that level. I'm just saying. It's...
Hey, bro. Hey, the only thing that I can say about the women's division in AEW is wish in one hand and shit in the other. See which one fills up first.
Right.
If I can't say this, Sin City Steve, with regards to AEW women's, if only they could get a facelift like Kenny Omega's music.
Right. we'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get
sometime in the next hour.
They're going to bring back the knockout tag team titles. So how about that? They're going to bring that back next pay-per-view, which is hard.
They have enough women. I think it's perfect.
Absolutely. Next pay-per-view, hard to kill. So we'll get a chance to see them.
Let's just reevaluate that idea. Because the WWE, who has more than enough women, has a fucking hard time doing anything with those tag titles. So why?
It's going to be a challenge because I just quickly looked up because I only am somewhat familiar with all of the knockouts. You got Alicia Edwards, Deonna Purrazzo, Jessica Havoc, Jordan Grace, Kira Hogan, Kimberly, Kaylee Ray, Madison Rain. I mean, well, if we can mention Madison Rain, that's just to name a few. And I have a couple more that I saw. I mean, they could do something, but they only have one show. So that's my big question of how that works, because WWE, if we're looking at them as an example, they go over. Huh? Go ahead.
Yeah, they have three shows.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. And if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, that's what's kind of helped when they do want to actively take advantage of those three shows to showcase their women's titles. I wonder what Impact's going to do.
Well, to end the pay-per-view was the Impact World title with Eric Young and Rich Swann. I would tell you this, Rich looked really good. The few times we've seen Rich, as of course he's had this whole leg injury and all, which has kept him off the show, of course, you know, with the storyline. But of course, he always has on his shirts and different things, so you never really see just how ripped or that, you know, that he is. And apparently he added an extra 25 pounds of upper muscle, and you know that shown, and it looked you know, he looked really good in the ring coming out to go up against Eric Young. He also cut his beard and mustache off, you know, with had a little bit of a young look there. Overall, the match was really good between both of them. Yep, absolutely. I wish so the winner of that in your new Impact World Champion is now Rich Swann, no longer Eric Young, and I was pretty shocked at that. I thought Eric was maybe going to hang on that at least one more by one more pay-per-view. But Rich got it back, and overall I would tell you that Bound for Glory, for what it was a really good event. I'm curious to see where they're going to go with a lot of storylines. The match was called not only by Josh Matthews, but the return of Don Callis as well. So it was good to hear him back at the commentator table. But
did you say it was worth the price you paid?
I will say it wasn't.
How much did you pay?
I won't disclose that.
$3.99.
But I tell you one thing: if you try to watch the replay, you'll know what the price is because it's the same. All right. With that,
That was a good one.
With that, we're jump right over into AEW, and let's jump into it. What do you think about that show, Sin City, Steve?
Come on.
So here's the thing, is this show focused largely on the tournament, and what I'm going to do is I'm not going to recap every single fucking match on the show, but it definitely looks like how we all pegged it right from the beginning, that this tournament is going to come down to Omega versus Paige in the finals. All the right people won. You had Janela, which was supposed to be Janela, ended up being Sunny Kiss, getting TV time. That's about as optimistic as we can be, you know, just super squash. And then a little bit of botchiness, I thought, from Penta and Phoenix in their match. Yeah, to say the least. So not exactly the sharpest match there. But honestly, this show for me was all about one thing, Le Dinner Debonair.
Yes, it was.
Which was probably one of the fucking most surreal things that I've seen on a professional wrestling show in years.
Awesome.
Did it make you feel like Saturday Night Live a little bit?
It did.
Okay, I was going to say, because that's how I felt.
Without a doubt, man. It was top notch. You had MJF, who I had no idea that MJF was an actual legitimate singer, but he is. He's got a great voice, and we all know how skilled Jericho is. And let's call it what it is. I think that we made the joke on this show last week about, you know, someone busting into Guys and Dolls, and then you have these guys bust into a full on musical theater routine, mm-hmm. complete with a kick line. Mm-hmm. It was fucking fun, escapist entertainment. That's the best way of describing it.
Since Izzy, can I ask you this question?
Yeah,
what's that?
Would you say if there was ever anybody that could not so much top Chris Jericho or be the next coming of Chris Jericho, is it definitely MJF?
Without question.
I'm just saying, like, I was proud.
Without question. I'm gonna be 100% transparent on this as well. If this vignette would have taken place on a WWE created show, I completely would have shit canned it. And yep. There's a very simple reason behind that. Because with AEW, they are emphasizing what their talent roster can do positively. And they are starting to finally attempt to hide the negatives. Okay. With WWE, you probably would have had AJ Styles singing along with fucking Lars Sullivan or some shit.
Gosh, that's horrendous. That pairing's horrendous.
Time out. So you said AEW is finally
starting to make traction on that.
So basically what you're saying is they should stick to doing musical numbers instead of actually wrestling.
No, that's not what he said. Because both of those guys can do either. Yeah. But the thing is, they know what talent sets that their roster has. And they're finally starting to embrace that stuff.
I'm seeing much of the same. I agree with you, Sin City. Yeah. I see much of the same.
So do you guys remember Spider-Man 3?
Yeah.
With Tobey Maguire?
Yeah.
I think I blocked that out from my memory.
Well, one of the reasons that people blocked it out from their memory is because he did a song and dance number in it.
Yeah.
And people just shit-canned the fuck out of it.
I didn't shit-can it. I thought it was brilliant. But then again, I'm weird.
I'm just saying in general. And what's really funny is that you know, the base of AEW fans, and I'm glad, Steve, you said that because you do make a justified point, but I'd say that a lot of the fans would basically shit can it if it was a WWE thing, but think it's great this way. But at the same time, you're kind of seeing a mixed review. So, you know, I'm with you on the playing to the strengths. And MJF absolutely would be able to be a Broadway type actor and singer if he didn't love wrestling. I think Jericho is a good enough singer. Sometimes he gets a little pitchy, but he's a rock and roll singer, not a show tune singer. I never thought that we would be sitting here breaking down a song and dance number. Just period.
Which I'm shocked, because that would be more up your alley, Matt Michaels.
No. I'm just saying in terms of on a wrestling show. I mean, yeah. On the dance number. What is, I think, equally as interesting was the fact that the Elias concert was just as, like you said, playing to strengths. He's like the only person that you could actually say, okay, we know that they took something with him and played to his strength of right. doing that with the song and dance number. But usually you'd see, you know, some of these guys like Road Dogg, who can sing, but, you know, let's face it, it just never went anywhere. And Jeff Jarrett, like, for God's sakes.
With My Baby Tonight.
Yeah. So it's cool to see this little different thing. Let's just see how I still say, in the end, you got to turn MJF full heel in terms
of
have Jericho go face.
Yeah.
And you'll open up a new way to have Jericho go against some of the heels that you want to start getting, established.
I think they somewhat planted the seeds for that just in some of the dialogue that was used at the table. And I think that was really smart of them to do. One thing that I have to point out, we mentioned and we talked about ratings earlier. I hope that Tony Khan and everybody within AEW that they don't look too poorly at this. But believe it or not, Matt Michaels, the segment that we've spent so much time talking about in the last couple of minutes actually was the lowest rated segment on all of Dynamite this past week.
You're absolutely, and I know where your mindset is that you're right. They're playing to the strengths, yet, like I was saying, the AEW crowd.
Yep.
Ouch. I think you're absolutely right. And if they get scared off by that, that would be a damn shame.
Yeah. And now, mind you, just to give some context, it wasn't like as if this match was going up against like the tag title match or anything like that. No, it was going against Xia Li and Casey Catanzaro on NXT. And it still did the smallest number. Now, mind you, it was still larger than anything on the other show. But come on, man. Don't shit.
I wasn't even going to mention that one in the NXT show. To be honest, it wasn't right. Much to it.
So, but yeah, more escapism. Not so much that it takes over the entire show, but don't be afraid to do it, because I know that people within AEW watch the show and we appreciate you. But don't let the escapism and the comedy and stuff take over your product. But don't be afraid to do it, especially when you have performers that can do it well, as was shown this past Wednesday.
Anyone else want to add to AEW?
That was so strong that you don't even need to add anything else.
All right, over to NXT. What you got?
NXT was NXT. It was good. The one big story, basically, that led up to the end of the night is, obviously NXT members were taken out one by one. And eventually, that resulted in, William Regal having, sorry, it's on my throat, a new tag team come in, basically, to go ahead and compete. And, it was quite interesting. I mean, toward the end of the night, pretty much, you had Thatcher and, I'm in my throat, guys. Damn. Sorry.
The one time I could actually use the mute button.
Yeah.
Well, listen, NXT.
Right. No, sorry. It really was in my throat. All right. I'm back on. I'm sorry. So anyways, what I was saying was Timothy Thatcher and, I'm not Timothy Thatcher. I'm sorry. One second, guys. I really.
Lorcan and Birch.
No, I'm sorry. Like, I got something in my throat. Give me a second. You guys go ahead. Take it over, Lucky. Seriously.
Mute when you're back, buddy. Go ahead, Lucky.
Overall, I mean, I think the Bronson, what he was saying is that people were getting taken out and, it was all leading up to the Lorne Orkin and Daniel Burchill, reveal at the end. They actually won the tag team titles, and it was because of old Primetime Pat coming back. And I thought that was a pretty good angle that they ran, and it made a lot of sense. Elsewhere on the show, I thought Reed and Theory was pretty good. Then you had Theory at the end of it saying, I quit, packed up his bags and rolled out.
So what do you think is going to – are we just going to see a flip and Theory's going to take – Chad Gable's spot in case.
he has to come back as something different, something meaner, something nastier, because dude's got all the talent and the look. And nobody quits on TV, let's be real.
Well, it was another way to get cars involved.
Of course.
Because, yeah, he quit and then he leaves in the car. You can't do a show nowadays without a car. you know, as always, it's solid, but god damn, that first match with Ciampa and
Dream
and Michael J. Fox,
Michael J. Fox, Kushida.
Damn, I mean, once again, it's like, I know what the big reveal was at the end in terms of why you have the championship and reveal and everything at that point, but that match just like you were talking about the pay-per-view starting off with Reigns and Uso. I don't know, man. That match just kind of just tore down the fucking house. It was hard to look at the rest of the show without going, boy, man, I just want to see them go for fucking 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Facts. Now, did you guys, while I was coughing a lung up, did you guys talk about Legado del Fantasma versus Isaiah Swerve? Did you talk? I didn't know if you did or not.
No, we did.
Okay. That was a really good match as well. Speaking of how they started off NXT, that match was amazing, especially the one that shined out all that was Jake Atlas. You know, obviously he's been doing good these last couple of weeks, but that one move that I saw to where it was off the, I think it was it Jake Atlas off the top rope? No, Jake Atlas was on the ropes, and one of the team members of Legado del Fantasma went off to, I guess, dive off the top, and he ended up turning it into a Spanish fly. That was amazing. There was also another one that just before they went to pitcher in pitcher, Swerve did a crazy aerial move out on the outside. But they've been on hit. But I felt like as far as Legado del Fantasma, that group has been doing great. But finally finding that right sauce with Swerve, Atlas, and Adonis, it was pretty good. I'd like to actually see it again. So.
And let's face it too, Gargano's, Jesus Christ, they're gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they hate spinning that wheel. They just want him dead. Why do they want me dead?
Can I point out and give props to NXT for the continuity in the Pat McAfee reveal? So everybody always knows that I love to give WWE shit when they do not display proper continuity, but Pat McAfee was absolutely the perfect person for them to reveal, to be with, you know, with Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. Yeah. Biggest reason, neither of those guys are amazing on the mic, but they are extremely solid in the ring. So you put a great mouthpiece with him, somebody that's not as overly experienced in the ring, and they can help each other. The other thing that is amazing, and I don't know if this was planned, but this is another tie-in as to why McAfee was the perfect choice for who to replace Ridge Holland, because that's I would almost put money that Ridge Holland would have been the person that they shown. Yep. And did the reveal with and things of that nature. A couple of reasons. Ridge Holland said that he was paid to take out Adam Cole. Right. Okay. Pat McAfee, as we all know, former NFL punter, signs an extremely lucrative deal with SiriusXM for his show. And so he has the money to, in theory, have been the one to pay off Ridge Holland. Also, you've got a great three-way or a great six-man possibility now as things develop. So it could not have come together any more perfectly than for them to reveal Pat McAfee. So top-notch, amazing call to everybody involved with that.
Yeah. Nice. It really did work out for the best. I mean, even though, you know, accidents happen. The one thing I wonder, though, do you think that McAfee is going to be more in a kind of like in the same situation that MVP is, like he'll actually do matches and whatnot, but still kind of operates as a managerial role?
Of course.
Have you noticed
I honestly think that this is setting up like a War Games match.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And you get UE in there against this new trio, and yeah, blow the doors off. Everything's awesome.
Let me ask you this quick side question. I know we can't talk about it too much. Have you seen a trend, at least in WWE, where you have managers that actually can hold their own in the ring, like pretty legitimately? Do you see something like that kind of being a mainstay, maybe across the board?
I think that, you know, if they do something like that too much, that will call it out for being bullshit. I don't like saturating the product with multiple instances of the same thing. But I mean, this pairing, I'm completely good with it.
Yeah, I wasn't mad at it. I was cool with the reveal. I thought that mask, that metal mask that he wore, was pretty cool, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I wasn't mad at all. I was actually happy. Look forward to next week.
All right. Anything else from NXT?
Yeah.
All right.
Halloween Havoc. That's it.
That's right. That'll be coming up this Wednesday as well. All right. Quick thing I want to ask you, Sin City, and you guys who may be familiar with New Japan, maybe could jump on this. Just a quick discussion. And that is, I noticed that after, of course, the G1, now we're preparing for Power Struggle.
Yep.
With New Japan, so apparently they don't do wrestling shows on a weekly basis in terms of like a Raw or AEW Dynamite or whatever. It just, everything leads up to another sort of event. Is that kind of how it is, Sin City? No. Like, okay.
Sorry, brother.
Please, yeah. Help me explain. Yeah.
So the thing is, obviously you can watch the shows on Access if you get Access. So that would definitely help out. Mm-hmm. They do have their weekly show on Access, I believe, still. But yeah, it's just like every other wrestling company. I mean, their next pay-per-view is Power Struggle. And they do things the traditional way. They have the feuds blow off at pay-per-views and use the weekly shows to build to those pay-per-views. Gotcha. So I think that, speaking of Power Struggle, you've got Naito against Evil, at the top of the card, for the IWGP Heavyweight and Intercontinental Double Championship. And then you've got, Kota Ibushi putting his G1 climax, right to challenge contract is what they call it. Which allows him to challenge the champion at, Wrestle Kingdom. He's going to be putting that championship opportunity on the line against Jay White. So,
and I saw that they just announced they're going to do another two night. Is it Wrestle Kingdom in January?
Yeah. And, January 4th and 5th.
Gotcha. Yeah. Exciting times back at the, Tokyo Dome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bucket list for sure.
I know, right? Yes, that's definitely something to work up to. Well, we'll just keep our eye on Power Struggle and see how that all turns out, and we'll have a little bit more information with that in the future. With that, that is our wrestling talk. We want to thank everybody for hanging out with us and putting in your comments, and if you listen to the podcast, we thank you as well for listening. And with that, I think we're just going to call that a night. We want to wish everybody a happy Halloween for those who want to be doing any type of trick or treating. You know, maybe you want to leave out your front door and then go through your garage. That's about as much of trick or treating that's going to be happening this year. All right. So with that, that is it. Peace.
Biggest Bad Boys of Podcasting.